You're listening to
Cattails. Hi, and welcome to Cattails. Amongst those bands at the forefront of the punk movement of the 70s was the Vibrators, with their seminal album Pure Mania influencing the genre and many other musicians at the time. 41 years later, the Vibrators are still performing, and I spent some time with founding member Eddie, who chatted about the punk scene, their album Past, Present and Into the Future, and Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. This is the one with John Eddie Edwards. So I'm sitting here with Eddie Vibrator, actually, we should say, shouldn't we? Eddie from the Vibrators. And we're in gorgeous North Norfolk in Vowood House, which is absolutely stunning, I think you'd agree, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it is. It's lovely, yeah.
It is wonderful. So what brings you up this neck of the woods? It's not your usual stomping ground, is it?
Well, we stop up in Norwich quite often. We've played in Norwich quite a few times, and that's always been really good. In the Arts Centre there, and Waterside, and Owl Sanctuary, a few places we played there. And there's a friend of Nigel's is here, and he said, do you want to come up here and do this sort of charity thing? So sounded like fun, so we said yes, and so that's why we're here.
And that's why you're here. And it is for charity, and it's for a local charity, actually, for children with mental difficulties and mental health, and helping them, you know, sort of in society and stuff. So, is, you know, charitable stuff, is that something you like to get involved in, or is it just the opportunity there?
I'm not as involved as I perhaps should be, but we do bits and bobs of charity things, and every now and again, you know, you're always getting asked for stuff, but, you know, all musicians do, you know.
Yeah.
That's when everything's... want to raise money for charity, they phone up the local bands, should we put a show on? Musicians do that sort of thing. That's part of the parcel of being a musician, you have to do that.
Yeah.
And it's always a pleasure to do it, so, you know, it's cool. Yeah, it's all a good thing.
Nice to give back, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, everyone comes out, has a good fun night, and the profits all go in the right direction, so that's good.
Yeah, all good, isn't it? Well, the last time I was here, I was actually interviewing Glenn Matlock from Sex Pistols.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Which takes you right back to the beginning of your career, doesn't it? Because you were actually supporting them in 1976, I believe.
Well, yeah, we played with them two or three times in 76, once at the 100 Club, and then... the 100 Club Festival, though we were on a different night to them at the 100 Club Festival. But we played there at the 100 Club with them and a couple of other places as well around London and the Clash and all those sort of bands in the 76. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. He's a good guy, Glenn Matlock, isn't he?
He's lovely.
Got on really nice with him, yeah.
Yeah, he's little. He's very impish. I call him my little imp because
he
was
really?
Very impish when he was interviewed.
He was the one in the band that had the least ego. He was the easiest one to get on with, I always found. He was a nice guy.
Yeah,
they were all pretty cool, ain't they? Like, did quite a few. You always used to bump into them when you went out to clubs and stuff, you know, down Dingwalls after gigs and everything. After you played at the Marquee, you go down Dingwalls and they'll be down there.
Yeah. So going back to those sort of days, let's take you right back to the early days with the old punk scene there. You know, it was an incredibly vibrant time, wasn't it? What's your greatest memories of those sort of days?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think my greatest memories is just being there, being part of it, playing live, doing the shows and everything. Every time you did a show, there'd be more people, and you turn up, and there'd be longer queues around the block to get in. It was just, you know, very exciting. You know, I mean, music at that point had got very boring and very sort of, you know, there was a lot of this prog rock stuff, and you know, you had the Queen doing sort of 8-minute operatic crap and all that, you know, and I hated all of that, you know. You know, for me, that's kind of possibly the worst record of all time, is that Queen thing. What's it called?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, I loathe it. And, you know, for us, it was very important to get back doing, you know, roots rock and roll and, you know, being loud and snotty and fast. And then you started playing around, and then you suddenly find there was a whole, you know, not a whole lot, but, you know, four or five or half a dozen bands of the same ilk, all trying to do the same thing. The Damned, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, you know, and the Stranglers and the Jam. That was basically it, and the Vibrators, and that was who was getting the scene going. So you met all these people, and you kind of, they were all kindred spirits, and you kind of think, here comes here. I thought we were the only bands covering Iggy Pop, and they're doing it as well. So you know, that was good. It was very exciting, but the shows were the most memorable thing. Nutso, you know, really crazy.
Well, it was a mad time, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But that was all part and parcel of the movement, wasn't it, as well? Were you conscious that it was actually about being a bit rebellious, or was it just music that you wanted to take?
Well, I think if you're doing rock and roll, rock and roll is rebel music, and if you're not, if the music you're making isn't a little bit rebellious, then you're not making good rock and roll records, and that's what we've tried to do.
Mm.
I mean, there wasn't a punk scene at the time. That sort of enveloped it, and people came in with this expression, which came over from America with the Ramones and that, and it was punk rock. And,
yeah,
right. Yeah, we felt that we were part of that. So, Yeah, we'll have some of that. It's good. We like it.
Yeah. Well, 40 years last year was your 40th anniversary, wasn't it? It's now 41 years now. I mean, do you find it quite surprising that you're still playing and people still want to come out and hear you?
Well, when we started, I mean, people used to ask me that question, will you still be around in 40 years? And I said, yeah, I'd consider it. If we were still playing in 40 years' time and we were being successful and we'd kept the ball rolling all that time, then I'd consider that to be success. Because I never felt that you were going to, you know, sell a million albums, because, you know, the record, the music stations don't play that kind of music.
Yeah.
And they fought hard against playing it even back in those days. Although we did have two top 30 hits, so, you know, that wasn't too bad. And our albums, first two albums, went to top 30 as well. But, you know, to me, you know, to be successful was longevity. And we've, you know,
you've certainly
succeeded
done it.
In that, yeah.
Absolutely. But I also read that actually Pure Mania was cited in the Guinness Book, or no, the Guinness Encyclopedia of Music as being one of the most influential albums of all time.
Well,
it's in the top 50,
that.
Apparently.
Yeah,
it is, apparently. So they were so. Yeah. With that new news that I've just brought to you there, how does that make you feel about that sort of crafted piece of work?
Yeah, no, that's what you wanted to do.
Mm.
You kind of think, if people are still playing our records in 50 years' time, which it looks like they probably will be, that's success, isn't it? Because we were listening to the radio coming up, and they were playing stuff from, I think it was 71, 72. We go, don't remember that one.
Yes.
Don't remember that one. So if you're still getting played and people are remembering it, and, you know, and other bands covering it, you know.
Mm.
I mean, there's been a lot of bands that have covered our songs, used our song titles for name bands.
Stiff Little Fingers.
Yeah, yeah. To name but one. But as well as, you know, Pure Mania, there's a few bands called, there's a band in America and in Sweden called Pure Mania, and other titles as well.
That's amazing then, isn't it, Ruth? So in a way, it's great to be recognised from the people who buy your music and coming to see you, but is that something quite satisfying about, you know, your contemporaries taking music titles from, you know, some of the creations that you've made? Does that make you feel quite good?
Oh, yeah. It kind of validates what you do. That's what you kind of hope. We used to nick off of Chuck Berry, and now Chuck Berry's dead, and they're nicking off of us.
That's the cycle of the way it goes, isn't it, in music, really?
Oh, yeah. But as long as you're doing music that you really love and that you want to, you think is valid and worthwhile.
Mm.
And everything we do, we've always been a bit of a rebellious band. We've never gone down the mainstream. We've never done, you know, chickened out and gone into doing disco rock or anything like that. Because we just didn't want to do that. So we didn't feel that comfortable doing that. And we've always ploughed our own furrow, sort of thing.
I always like to ask punk bands, because I talk to a lot of punk artists about, you know, Top of the Pops, and I know that obviously you appeared on Top of the Pops once, didn't you, with Automatic Love, I think, something?
Yeah, we did that Automatic Love.
Yeah, so was that almost, did that feel like you were selling out at the time? Because punk was on 100 Rebellion and then Top of the Pops, very...
It was pretty difficult to get on Top of the Pops. You had to get in the top 30 and stuff, and so we were kind of happy. And that was the... Radio playing TV is the window to the world. If you don't get played on the radio and you don't get played on the TV, you don't sell records. So it's absolutely vital to do that, you know.
Yeah.
And like I say, today, very little punk stuff gets played on the radio. Occasionally, you know, you get other people coming on and they say, oh, this band was a great influence on me, and they put on a Clash record or something. But, you know, you don't get a great deal of... Even the sort of ballady stuff or the softer stuff that we sometimes do, you know, Baby Baby never got played much on the radio.
No.
It's just sad, really, but, you know.
It is, isn't it, really? But then I suppose there's all those commercial undertones, isn't it, that they've got to tick lots of different boxes and all that kind of stuff, really.
I mean, if we had about a tenth of the airplay that someone like Madonna gets, we'd probably sell 10 times more records.
Yeah, that's the way of the world, isn't it? But, of course, it's all changed now, hasn't it? You know, music industry is not quite what it was, you know, in those days. And,
It's hanging on by a thread, I think. Yeah. Even the clubs and stuff, this kind of music we do. But, you know, there's still kids growing up and enjoying it. And so my daughter said she's been brought up to, you know, listen to the Beatles and the Ramones and stuff like that. And she just said to me one day, Dad, why does everyone like such crap music? And I said, well, it's because they don't hear the good stuff.
Well, there's a lot to be said for that, actually.
Yeah.
That's very
luckily,
true.
People listen to your radio station.
Yes, exactly.
They'll be listening to the good stuff.
They certainly will. They certainly will. So with 40 years behind you here now, 41 years, how have you managed to sustain a career like that then?
God knows. I don't know. Stupidity, I suppose. Stubbornness. I don't know. You just, that's what you do for a living. Well, you know, if you work in a bank, you go in the bank every day. But then... you probably get bored stupid of that and you want to retire, but doing this, it's hard to kick it, you know.
Yeah.
Like if you're Emma, Eddie.
He's a charmer, isn't he?
He's serious, then.
So in terms of, you know, you said there about music playing and albums, etc. You've up to something like 10 or 12 studio albums now, aren't you?
I think it's way past that.
Is it way past that now already?
Yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah, I would imagine it's more like, oh, God, we did volume 10, and that was about 25 years ago, so we definitely do. It's about 22, I think.
Is it really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, the newest one is called Past, Present, Into the Future, and it was kind of for the 40th anniversary.
Okay.
And so we got the original lineup with Pat Collier, and we got Gary Tibbs on it, John Ellis on it, and the current lineup as was then as well, with myself and Pete and Daryl, and Knox, of course, is on it, and produced by Pat. So that's come out. That sounds great. People are giving us good feedback from that. And we've done it on The Pledge, and now it will be re-released on Cleopatra Records in America in about September.
That's terrific. So you did a Pledge campaign to start with to get it running up and running, like many bands do these
days. Yeah, well, it's a way of making a bit more money out of doing records, because records don't sell as much these days, so you kind of plug into your core fan base a bit harder and try and get them to give them something special back, and it makes a bit more money for you and a bit less money for the record companies, maybe. It'll be out in September time.
In September. And where will people be able to buy this?
Oh, everywhere, hopefully, yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Terrific. So in terms of, like, the music industry changing, we mentioned their Pledge, you know, Pledge music and, you know, Top of the Pops in the old bygone days. Do you think it's difficult now for new bands to come into the industry?
Well, I think it must be 10 times more difficult it was when we started. I don't know, because I'm not trying to break into the industry.
No.
But I think that today you've got to go out and play live, and live is the be-all and end-all. And one of my big slight things is a lot of people just go to the big festivals and they say, oh, I've seen all the bands. It would be better if they went to, instead of paying £300 to go to one festival, if they spent £10 and went to see 30 different shows with little bands and put the money into the scene like that. But anyway, that's my own personal thing.
No, I have to agree. I mean, I think that's a difficult thing, isn't it, now, that actually, you know, people do get, you know, waylaid with Glastonbury and et cetera. And, you know, it's a shame, isn't it, because
a lot
of bands don't get seen.
Well, they're far more pop-orientated. Yeah. They used to be rock festivals, and it used to be sort of, you know... And we still do Rebellion up in Blackpool every year, and that goes very well. And we do big festivals in Czech Republic and Podporu, or whatever it's called, in Czech Republic this year, and those are all very good. You get a lot of people in, so there is, you know, we do some of those festivals, but I think there's maybe, instead of all these people going to see Beyonce at Glastonbury, they'd be better off going down their local pub and seeing their local little band there.
Yeah, and supporting
them. Some support.
And probably have a better time as well.
Yeah,
come on for the real, for the local scene of music.
Absolutely.
Oh, bless you. Well, so tonight it's going to be a great gig.
It looks like a fun place to play.
It's a beautiful place, and lots of legendary people have also played here as well, actually. Yes, we need to speak to them about the artists that have been at Vowood Festival before. Glenn Matlock, as I've mentioned, quite a few people down there as well. So you're amongst a good crowd.
Excellent.
So I do hope it goes very well. And thank you very much for talking to me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No, it's my pleasure's all mine.
Oh, thank you.
We'll see you in another 42 years.
Yeah, oh, perhaps not. You've been listening to Cattails. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.